Hello everyone, you listen to J Movie Talk episode 108 as I'll be talking 2009's Adventureland.
The option of the flute.
People are trying to kill me.
Get the fuck out, motherfucker!
Get out of my doorway, motherfucker! Give me a reason! Just give me a fucking reason! You don't know what I'm capable of! Come on! Please!
All right, so how's it going, everybody? I'm back with episode 108 and everything. This episode, I decided to do something a little different after I finished up my Quentin Tarantino series of films. I really didn't know what I really wanted to do after that. So the way this episode kind of came about is I put a poll up on Twitter where I asked a question, kind of unique question, where I asked what movie should I review next, basically asking a movie that takes place in a specific place. And the four films that I used was Caddyshack, Dirty Dancing, Taking Woodstock, and Adventureland. So, for anyone who don't know what exactly I meant by that, Taking Woodstock takes place where where Woodstock was the concert and everything. Dirty Dancing takes place at a resort place or whatnot. Caddyshack takes place at a golf course, and Adventureland takes place at a fair. So that's kind of my basis behind those choices, and the winner ended up being Adventureland, which I'm not mad at. I was a little surprised that no one wanted me to talk about Dirty Dancing, but not saying that I do like the movie, but just a little surprised that it didn't get no votes. But so maybe I'll put in another poll and hopefully see what happens, because that's kind of the same thing that happened with Tarantino. When I put him, he was in the same poll with Catherine Bigelow, where she won that one. Tarantino didn't get no votes, and then I put him in the next one and he ends up winning it. So I don't know, maybe if I decide to do another poll or whatnot, put Dirty Dancing in it, see how well it does there. So before I get into this movie, just want to go through the synopsis and talk about the cast. Now I was a little surprised, and it's kind of funny really, because when I looked the movie up, I mean, I've seen it a few times, but it came out in 2009, and it was unplanned for me to really do this movie. So, but the fact that I am doing it, came out in 2009, we're in 2019 now, so it is the 10-year anniversary of this movie. Officially, it won't be until April 3rd, but it is the 10-year anniversary of this movie, which is kind of crazy, really, whatnot. So I'm basically doing a 10-year anniversary movie. It's kind of my first unofficial anniversary movie that I'm doing. So in the summer of 1987, a college grad takes a nowhere job at his local amusement park, only to find it's the perfect course to get him prepared for the real world. And it stars Jesse Eisenberg as James, Kristen Stewart as M, short for Emily, Ryan Reynolds as Mike Connell, Wendy Malick as Mrs. Brennan, which is James's mother. Let's see who else here. We have Mike Starr as Joel, Kristen Wiig as Paulette, Bill Hader as Bobby. Trying to think, is anybody else really of note? I almost forgot. Marguerite Levivia, I believe that's how to say it. She plays Lisa P, who I was surprised that I actually knew her from something else, which is from the TV show The Deuce. If you listen to my coverage along with co-host Chantel on TV's own podcast, where we review The Deuce, and she's kind of one of our least liked characters on that show. So I do have some things to talk about in regard to her, and especially when I realized that she was the same person from The Deuce. Whatnot, I definitely have a lot to say about her in that regard. So the movie kicks off, like I said, 1987. In Movieverse, I'm actually 1 year old, which is kind of crazy because I was born in 86. So And this is the summer of 87, so I was 1 year old when this movie came out. Well, not when the movie came out, but when the movie takes place and everything, which is kind of crazy. And everything like that. The movie kicks off with James at a party with some of his friends, and he breaks up. Well, he doesn't break up, but his girlfriend breaks up with him, which kind of throws him into like a... I would say this is like the genesis of what spews his life off into a tangent, because his girlfriend breaks up with him and everything. Then he gets some even worse news from his parents, where his dad basically loses his job and kind of gets, well, doesn't kind of, he gets demoted in a sense, and he's going to be making considerably less money than what he was making, which forces James to where he cannot go on a trip to Europe with his friends because his family doesn't have the money anymore. He can't understand why his parents, you know, well, his parents can't understand why he's so upset about it and everything, but it kind of makes sense. Like, okay, he's been preparing for this for who knows how long, but now because his dad has lost his job in a sense, he's forced to change. The trajectory of his life completely changes now. And I will have to say this, I do like how they kind of throw this in there, that this is where his dad becomes like an alcoholic, and it becomes like a running theme throughout the movie. And his dad doesn't even have a lot of lines in the movie, but it's just the fact that just about every time that you see his dad on screen, he is either drinking or he's trying to hide a bottle somewhere. And there's even at one point in the movie where James gets blamed. I mean, James was drinking, but the bottle that gets found by his mom, James gets blamed for it. But the look on the dad's face, it's just priceless, because the dad knows that it's his, but his son is taking the rap basically for his, you know, addiction now. And like I say, it is sad, but it's kind of funny that this is like a running theme throughout the movie, and everything. So like I say, when James finds this out and everything, like I say, it kicks his life into a whole new trajectory, and he is forced to have to get a summer job. So, you know, he's thinking that, okay, he can go to certain places and, you know, or whatnot, and it'd be easy for him to get a job per se. So he goes around to a couple of places or whatnot and calls a few places, and no one wants to hire him because he doesn't have any real working skills. And it's kind of crazy too, especially when you're first starting out, because I can think about when I first started working when I was younger or whatnot, you know, when jobs say, oh, you know, how much experience do you have? And it's like, well, how do you get experience if you've never worked before? You know, in a job won't hire you based off of that. If you're like, okay, this is my first job, and they don't want to hire you because you have no experience. But it's like, well, how do you get experience? Everyone has to start somewhere. So I would always find it funny, like how certain jobs would do that, of where, oh, well, we can't hire you because you don't have any experience. Well, how do I get experience if I haven't been hired anywhere yet? So James kind of goes through that whole thing, and he you know, it's forced in a sense to have to go to Adventureland to apply for the job. And he's thinking that, oh, he got to go through this whole, you know, shtick of what he's been doing, like, oh, here's my resume, this is what I've done, extracurricular activities, whatnot. But when he gets there and he meets Paulette and Bobby, played by Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, it doesn't really matter. He's already hired just by showing up, really. Because they need people. So he shows up, and they just automatically, like, they're dismissing him trying to, you know, sell himself, because they've already hired him because he's a kid or whatnot. So it's like, hey, you want a job? Here's a job, you know, whatnot. And I thought that was a little funny scene how they do that. Jesse Eisenberg as an actor, for me, he's always been one of those kind of one-trick ponies in the same. He kind of plays the same character over and over in a lot of ways. And in 2009, it wasn't so much of a problem because he was still young and we were still getting to know him. So in this movie, I wouldn't say that his acting is necessarily a problem, but when we get to Social Network, which I think it kind of worked for him in that movie, really. It works for him in that movie. But I really hated him as Lex Luthor because he kind of plays, you know, the similar character that he's been playing, you know, for a long time in Batman versus Superman as Lex Luthor. And like I said, he was one of the, I mean, the movie does have problems and whatnot, but for me, I felt like he was too young to be playing Lex Luthor, especially when you have Henry Cavill as Superman. You have Ben Affleck playing an older Batman. You should have had someone older playing Lex Luthor, in my opinion. I think it will work better. I've always said that Mark Strong should have played Lex Luthor in that movie.
Slow down, Tinkerbell.
I think he would have did a great job in it or whatnot. And, but Eisenberg, for me, like I said, he's never been what I say one of my favorites to watch, but during this little time period, he was good because in this year of 2009, Adventureland and Zombieland came out, two movies I actually watched and saw at the movie theater and everything. And like I said, he played, that's when we kind of started to notice, okay, he's playing like the same similar character. I would say him and Michael Cera have the same problem where they play the same character in every movie that they're in and everything, and it just kind of gets tired after a while. I would say in Adventureland, Eisenberg's quirks and neurotic behavior kind of works here, at least. So James, you know, once he's hired and everything, he meets Joel, who works games, because you have, and for some reason, I guess the games people, they're looked down upon by certain people from the park or whatnot, as if you're working games, then you suck, you're lame or whatnot. And he meets Joel, played by Mike Starr, who shows him around, you know, kind of shows him the ropes or whatnot and everything, and the two of them become friends. And Joel pretty much lets him know that, hey, you know, this fair, the way this whole thing works. So, like I say, Joel, he basically takes James around, showing him the ropes and everything, and basically lets him know, like, hey, all these games here, they're rigged. And he shows them, like, how they're rigged and everything like that. So, it kind of, I remember the first time I saw this movie, it made me look at fairs and places like that a little differently or whatnot, because it's like, yeah, they are, some for the most part, they are rigged. And also too, Joel tells him, said, you know, whatever you do, do not lose a giant ass panda. And everybody kind of tells him that a few times throughout the movie about losing a giant ass panda or whatnot, but then he ends up losing one, but it's not his fault, where he basically gets scammed by these two dudes with their kid and everything, and the dude is basically about to pull a knife out on him because he caught him holding the kid up to put the ring over the thing or whatnot, and like, hey, the kid wanted fair and square, blah blah blah. It's like, and so this is how James meets M, played by Kristen Stewart, for the first time, where she comes over, basically saves him, just gives up the panda and everything, and James gets all nervous, like, what's gonna happen now? I'm gonna lose my job now. I lost a giant panda. And she's like, is it really losing your, you know, getting knifed over or something like this? And everything, and everybody's kind of, you know, it kind of calms him down, and like, kind of right off the bat, they kind of hit it off and everything. I want to get this out of the way now and talk about Kristen Stewart, which is kind of funny because I am nowhere near a Kristen Stewart fan. So it's funny, I'm doing a movie about the two main actors that I'm not really huge fans of, but I do like the movie, which is kind of weird. So Kristen Stewart, this was before Twilight, and ironically enough, when she was filming this, this is where she got the audition to be in Twilight to play freaking Bella in the Twilight movie. So in a way, I have to blame Adventureland for Kristen Stewart's career with Twilight and how it kind of helped ruined vampires for at least a good decade almost. But now they're starting to make a comeback in a good way, so that's good. But But yeah, that's just a little trivia that she actually got the role of Bella Swan in Twilight films during an off day for the filming of Adventureland. But Kristen Stewart overall in this movie, I mean, I won't say they could have got someone better, but I kind of will say that they could have got someone better, because I don't, just like Jesse Eisenberg, she plays the same character over and over as well. There is no, they don't have any range, I feel, and they're both one trick ponies, and but for some reason here it works. But I guess because of, like I said about Eisenberg, this was the beginning of that, so it works here. But once you get to the point of where, oh, this is all they can do, really, they have no range, and everything, then it gets tiresome. But here it wasn't so much of a problem. So and like I said, she's not bad in this movie, and everything. It is hard to believe that she was 19 when this movie came out, and everything, because the movie came out in 2009. She was born in 1990, so she was 19. And the girl who plays Lisa P was actually 27 in real life, but you couldn't tell me that they were not the same age. I mean, it would have been, it makes me wonder if they would have got Lisa P to actually play M, how that would have worked. And I'm not really a big fan of hers, but I think as a character and as a acting overall, she was better than Kristen Stewart, whatnot. So I have to talk about the soundtrack to this movie, because as much as I like the movie, I think the soundtrack adds a lot to what makes this movie great, and kind of puts it in that little time capsule of a era that's long gone now. So just to kind of go through some of the songs here, I mean, a few of the songs that kind of stick out to me, at least, is freaking Rock Me Amadeus by Falco. I mean, that song, it's a cool song. I enjoy it. I don't listen to it like a lot, but I like it. It has a nice beat to it. But I do like in the movie, there's one scene where James is listening to it and it plays, and he's like, Jesus, they play this song like every 20 minutes. Like, what the hell is going on here? It's like, if I had to hear this song one more time, I'd kill myself or something like that. Because, I mean, it was a huge song, you know, back at that time and everything. Then, of course, the intro song for Lisa P, Tops by the Rolling Stones. That's a good song, too. I like it. And it kind of fits her introduction into the movie, which I liked. Another one is Let the Music Play by Shannon song. I like that song. It's a good club song and everything like that. And like I say, it's just like certain songs in the movie, it fits at different points in the movie and everything. That Satellite of Love, that's a joke in regards to the fact that Ryan Reynolds' character says the name of the song wrong when it's Satellite of Love by Lou Reed. Like I said, there's quite a few really good songs on this soundtrack. So for nothing else, I mean, the movie alone is made 1,000 times better because of the soundtrack. So if you haven't seen the movie or haven't heard all the songs from the soundtrack, I recommend going to check out the soundtrack for this movie, just to hear, you know, some of these really good songs from back in the 80s and everything. So after this, we get where, I do want to mention about this supposed friend of James, Tommy Frigo, played by Matt Bush, who I remember when I first saw this, I was like, this character is annoying as hell. Like, just something about him just annoys me. And because he has this thing where when he first sees James, well, at least when he first sees him, when they're coming to town and everything, and he's riding on his bicycle, and he looks over at James and sees him and gives him the middle finger and everything, and just kind of laughs or whatnot. So he's like, okay, that's nothing, right? But then when James is out mowing the lawn, he rides up behind him, jumps off his bicycle, and for some reason he had this obsession where he wants to hit James in the balls for some reason. It's like, what the hell is that about? And it it happens like a few times throughout the movie where, I mean, they're the park is closed and whatnot. They all standing around talking and drinking and stuff like this. And when they're getting ready to leave, because Tommy and James lives on the same block or whatnot. So his mom, Tommy's mom, is picking them up or whatnot, and he's like, all right, my mom's here, it's time to go or whatnot. So he's getting ready to leave, and M, she busts out, like, well, I can give you a ride. And that's like the best news that James gets, and he quickly says, I don't know, that's all right, for Frigo, I got a ride. And he's like, you go now or whatnot. And it's almost like Frigo gets pissed, so in front of everybody, he punches him in balls and he falls down to the ground. And even M, she's like, what the hell was that? And it's just weird, and it kind of got me thinking, because the way his character acts throughout the movie, it's like, is it supposed to be implied that maybe Frigo is supposed to be maybe gay or something like that? Because he, when it comes to things with James throughout the movie, he always is like right there, and this whole obsession that he has with hitting him in the balls, he doesn't try to do that with anybody else. It's just James that he wants to hit in the dick and the balls and everything. And even when they're at M's party at her house or whatnot, M and James, they're in the pool and everything. Of course, they get close. And I mean, like any dude or whatnot, you run a, you know, a hot girl or whatnot, and she gets out the pool. And they're like, oh, I'm going inside to get something to drink. He's like, yeah, I'll be right there. Then he notices, like, oh, shit, you know, dick is hard or whatnot. So he kind of, you know, like, ah, I'll meet you inside. He don't want nobody to see that. You know, he getting out of the pool with a freaking raging boner or whatnot, right? So right when he thinks no one's around or whatnot, he goes to get out of the pool, and there's Frigo. Oh, boner! James got a boner. It's like, what are you doing? You sitting there, you standing there watching? Like, what are you doing? And even when him and M is talking, Frigo's like in the background or whatnot, making, you know, different faces and stuff like this. And then also too, later on in the movie, Frigo is the first one to come to let James know about something that happened with M and somebody else that I talk about later as well. But it's just kind of weird that he's like that. And that's the only conclusion I could come to, is like, does he have like secret feelings for James, and that's the only way he can really express them? Because I mean, me personally, I've never had any friends who act the way this dude act or whatnot. You know what I mean? It's just one of those kind of like, is there something more to this character that we're not being told, that you really have to pay attention to? So I don't know. That's kind of weird. Also too, when there's a point later in the movie when James goes on a date with Lisa P, and even though he wasn't supposed to tell anybody, James that was, but he tells Frigo, and Frigo ends up showing up to see for himself and everything, and he's there, and it's just, like I said, just kind of weird. So we basically have two park celebrities here. Lisa P is a park celebrity when she shows up and everything. Like, everyone's so happy that she's back. You have the what I like to refer to as the Paul Revere running around saying, Lisa P is back, Lisa P is back and everything. And you know, because she's this really, you know, good looking girl that works at the park, even though she technically shouldn't work at the park, but she's there because I guess she wasn't supposed to be there this summer because her dad ended up getting hurt on the job, so he can't work. So she had to get a job again to, you know, help out with things around the house, which makes sense and whatnot. But she's a really hot chick, and everybody kind of like her and everything. So she's a park celebrity. And then the other park celebrity is Mike Connell, played by Ryan Reynolds, who's a much older guy, who's in a band and everything, because he actually played with Lou Reed, so that makes him a, you know, somewhat of a celebrity in a sense, and everything. He's a real musician that gets mentioned in the movie. So you basically have your two park celebrities in a sense. One's an older guy, one's the young girl, which it's kind of interesting that they did it like that. So through the course of the movies going along, because we get like a lot of randomness in the movie, just them hanging out at the park, you know, and stuff like this, and everything, at different games and stuff like that. But in the course of this is where James and M, they get closer, and you know, they become, you know, like a in a relationship in a sense. But the kind of looming thing that we get from certain things that's going on is the fact that M is secretly fooling around with Connell, who is a married man, and he takes her to his mom's basement, which is ridiculous in a sense. Because he can't take her to his house because, you know, he's married and, you know, his wife is there, whatnot. But either she goes to his mom's house where they hook up, or he comes to her house and they hook up. And the weird thing about it is that they actually talk about James and everything, because James becomes friends with Connell in a sense, and he kind of looks up to Connell. But then also too, M, she kind of confides in Connell about James with certain things, and it's weird. It's like, okay, you're fooling around with this dude, but you talking to him about your current supposed to be boyfriend type thing, which is kind of a weird, messy situation, really. But they end up, James and M goes to this bar, whatnot, and everything. And while they're there, Connor and his wife comes in, and James, like I say, because he's oblivious to what really is going on, and he's like, "Hey, Connor," and he's like, "Hey, how's it going, man?" And blah blah blah, you know, everything like that. And Connor, he kind of walks over, and he's like, "Hey, what's up?" He's like, "You didn't know you was coming." He's like, "Yeah, everyone knows I come here." He kind of shoots M this look, and she just kind of looks like whatever, whatnot. And it's like, "Oh, well," he's like, "Yeah, it was good seeing y'all. We're going to meet some friends in the back." So, like I said, I thought that was a weird kind of scene or whatnot. But at the same time, Connell is somewhat, I wouldn't say he's somewhat the worst, but he is the worst, because he's fooling around with M, this young girl. He's a married man, but at the same time, he's friends with her boyfriend, and he gives him advice about how to deal with her in a way, and it's like, what kind of dude are you, man? It's like, who does that? Who really? I mean, I don't know, maybe there's some guys out there that do stuff like that, but me personally, I couldn't be that dude. I couldn't be that guy. And it was kind of weird seeing Ryan Reynolds, you know, play that part and everything, because, you know, at this point, you know, he was Van Wilder. He, you know, he's the young, cool guy. But in this, he's the older guy that's kind of being this older, pervy type of dude with he likes younger girls. So it was interesting to see him playing this type of a part. But things really started kind of take a turn when James, because he has this thing where he just has to be the nice guy, and he wants to get even more serious with M. He tells her how he feels about her, but she doesn't want to get serious with him because she has this whole thing with Connell, and she kind of shoots James down in a bad way in regards to getting serious with him. But she leaves him to go tell Connell this, and it's like, okay, why are you doing, you know, this is a married man, but you confide in him, and he's basically your confidant, even though you're fooling around with him and he's married. It's like, well, once again, I'm just sitting there like, what are you doing? Like, what is this? So when James and M break up or whatnot, this is almost like a weird part move, because they break up in a way, and James, feeling slighted the way he is, he turns to Lisa P, and he starts talking to her, and it's kind of interesting. And like I said, it gets overlooked, but I noticed it this time watching it, that out of everybody in the movie, James is the only one to ever really ask Lisa P how her dad is doing, because when she came back, she did tell the story that, you know, he got hurt on the job, so he can't really do anything. They don't say exactly how he got hurt, but they just say he got hurt on the job. So whenever he sees Lisa P, he always asks, like, how's your dad doing? And she's like, oh, he's okay, and everything like this. And, you know, she kind of just talked about, but I just find it funny that, you know, out of everybody, you know, everyone likes this girl so much, but he's the only one who truly cared about her actual home life and everything. And I think in a way she did appreciate that, but like I said, no one else really cared, because all they just saw was Lisa P, the, you know, the they put her on a pedestal, And Lisa P, the I don't know the word I can use. I'm trying to think of, but Lisa P, I guess the mystique, the legend of Lisa P, superseded Lisa P, the actual person. And she herself kind of falls into that trap of being, falling into the, you know, she knows that everybody pretty much likes her and whatnot, but they don't really like her for who she truly is. I think the Lisa P is a mask of who Lisa, whatever the P stands for, actually is. And James was actually trying to like her for who she truly was and everything. So they're talking or whatnot, and Lisa P actually asked James out on a date, which kind of surprises him and this other dude or whatnot. And she was like, no, I'm serious. Like, just let me know when. And he's like, oh, okay, fine. So they decide to go out. They go out on a date. And ironically enough, it's to one of the places that James got turned down for a job from, because the manager, he even walks past and he kind of looks at James and gets kind of like a double look and then keeps on moving. So, and then that's where, like I said, where Frigo shows up and, you know, because he couldn't believe that James was actually going on a date with Lisa P and blah, blah, blah. And it was actually a nice little date and whatnot. And but the problem with James is that he tries to act more mature and more sophisticated than he truly is, because taking her out on a date to, you know, to some place to eat or whatnot, there's no problem. But the way he was acting, as if he was this, you know, top-notch businessman or something like that, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, it's just a date, man. It's nothing. It's not that serious. But they, so like I said, it was kind of weird, whatnot. But it made for some awkward moments, whatnot. But Lisa, she kind of let her guard down a little bit too with him and just kind of talked. And they, so after all that, James and him, they have this weird makeup after they break up type thing or whatnot, where he comes back and apologizes to her. Well, he comes to talk to her, he apologizes, she apologizes for how she talked to him and everything, and supposedly he's supposed to get back together after this. And Joel, he notices that they're back together, and it's almost like I won't say that he's sad, but he's not necessarily happy that they're back together. And at first when I saw it, I thought that, it does Joel secretly like him? But it wasn't so much that, it was more so the fact that he and another girl, I think it was Sue Page, I can't remember her name right now, because she wasn't a like important character in the movie, but he was kind of getting in a relationship with this girl who works there at the park too. And when, you know, things kind of get a little hot and heavy between the two of them and everything, because they actually went out on double dates and everything with M and James, and then so Joel, he basically gets into it with the girl that he was kind of in a relationship with, where she tells him that they can't be together anymore because she told her brother that they were a thing, and then the brother told their parents, and because they're Catholic or whatnot and he's Jewish or something, and she couldn't talk to him anymore. And it was just a really terrible thing, really. And just the look and hurt that went over Joel's face was priceless. And because, I mean, Joel isn't one of the main characters, but he's one of the second tier characters, and he's an interesting character. And Mike Starr, he plays it very, he does a good job in this movie, even though, like I said, he's not in it as much, but when he's on screen, you do kind of find yourself like, okay, what is it about this dude, and how old exactly is he? Because he smokes out of a freaking pipe, and he has a more of a mature way about him. And it was kind of a sucky thing that happened, where the chick just dumps him because the fact that he is Jewish, and you know, the family has a thing against it. And he even comes out and says, well, I'm atheist or whatnot. And it's like, she didn't even want to be friends with him no more. And it's like, okay, breaking up with him, that's one thing, but not even wanting to be able to talk to him anymore, that's a whole new level. And so I think that's why he kind of gives the look when M and James get back together. It's more of a somber type thing, because he's like, he's probably thinking, well, that was him with this other girl. So after, you know, they're back together, James and M, and then Frigo finds out, well, he comes and tells James about what he was just told about M and Connell doing push-ups in his car with no pants on, which means they was having sex, of course. And James can't believe it, because Connell is supposed to be his, you know, is like a friend to him, like almost like a big brother to him. And then M is supposed to be his girlfriend, and he can't believe it. So so James and Frigo, they get Frigo's mom's car, and they go looking for him. I mean, not for him, for M, I'm sorry. And because Lisa P even told, when they was on the date, told James that last summer that Connell, he was messing with a girl from the food stand and taking her back to his mom's basement. So James kind of kept that in mind when they went out looking for him, and that's where they went to Connell's mom's house, and lo and behold, they find M's car sitting there and everything. And they sit out there and they wait for her to come out. James get out and he comes up and he basically catches her in the act, and she's looking all crazy and everything, and he's truly heartbroken. And you can't really blame the dude for this, because the two people that he probably was the closest to at the park are the two people that was fooling around right under his nose, and it just throws him in a whirlwind, and he just, you know, he dips up out of there. And now this is where I felt like James was kind of stupid, because he goes back and he tells he starts talking back with Lisa P again, and they go out to a club and everything, and he tells her that M was fooling around with Connell. And now he tells her, it's like, hey, you can't repeat this to anybody. He's like, oh yeah, sure. Next day at the park, M's coming in, she's getting these weird looks from everybody, and then one dude comes over to where she's at, and he's talking about him doing a drum solo and everything like this, and she was like, what the hell is that? He's like, well, you like musicians, don't you, type of thing. It's almost like he was trying to hit on her or whatnot, you know, ridiculous type way, because Connell being a musician, so he feel, oh well, if I show you that I'm a musician, then you'll want to sleep with me too. And because of this, she ends up telling Paulette and Bobby that she's done, she quit. So she clocks out and she just leaves, and then she goes home and gets into it with her stepmom and everything, because there are a few points in the movie where the stepmom and her, they are not friendly at all, and the dad is kind of oblivious to the whole thing and taking the stepmom's side, and stepmom wears a wig. And it's funny because M comes into the house and they're having like a little dinner party, and she just walks over to the bar and fixes herself a drink, and the stepmom, you know, kind of calls out on it, and because she says that, you know, because the stepmom is getting complimented by how the house looks and everything, and M just kind of, she's like, well, you know, I liked it better when how my mom had it decorated and everything. And so the stepmom gets pissed about that and tells him she owes her an apology, and then they get into it, and M, which I do like the way she does this, she just kind of grabs her hair, which is a wig, and she just kind of pulls it, and it comes up in the back, and she said, well, god damn it, and she walks off storming off and fussing the cousin because she gotta go fix her wig and everything. And the dad chastises his M about it, and is like, you're taking the side of your current wife over your kid, who has had to deal with this for I don't know how many years or anything, but clearly she's hurt that her mom and dad are not together. And the dad is taking the side of his wife over his own child about how she truly feels about things. So I thought that was kind of terrible too, but it's like everybody just kind of started going their own way because of the fact that Lisa P told Nikki, who's her best friend, thought, oh, Nikki can't keep a secret, blah, blah, you know, she has a big mouth and all this. So James, he feels stupid about telling her this, and he decides to quit and everything. No, he doesn't decide to quit then. Connell, because word gets out, and Connell's wife, she finds out about it, and apparently they, you know, go through a rough patch and everything, but that doesn't stop Connell from still trying to hit on the young girls or whatnot. And that's where the whole satellite of love line comes about, because the shine a light on love is the name of the Lou Reed song. And that's when James kind of tells him, like, no, it's actually Satellite of Love. And they kind of had like a little funny exchange, and they still kind of cool after this whole thing, even though Connell was fooling around with his girlfriend and is a married man. They still seem to be cool. And James gets some bad news because his friend who went to Europe without him comes back, and because they still were supposed to go to New York together, and the friend was going to actually kind of support James for a little while in their apartment. But the friend tells him that, you know, since he's went over to Europe and he has a new outlook on life, he's decided to go to Harvard Business School, which of course is in Boston, which is not New York. So that still changes everything, and he gets pissed, and his life goes into a whirlwind. He wrecks the car and all this, which the mom, in a way, basically forces James to about paying the car with all the money that he saved still to go to New York for school. She basically wants him to pay for the damages to the car because of that, and that's where the whole scene comes about with that bottle that I was talking about earlier, the alcohol bottle that they find, and the dad just has this priceless, sheepish look on his face because the dad is clearly an alcoholic. And that's kind of an oversight by the mom, who doesn't know anything about this and everything. And so James, this is where he decides to quit the park, even though it's getting to the end of summer, because the movie basically takes place over the course of the whole summer, and we're getting to the final days of summer. And, you know, so James goes to see Bobby and Paulette, and he's like, hey, I want to thank you. Like, how you guys doing? He's like, oh, we're doing all right. Getting ready to shut this down for the rest of the summer and everything. And they, like, yeah, well, we'll see you next summer, right? It's like, oh, thank you. We'll see you next summer. It's basically trying to get him to commit to come back next summer. He's like, he's basically telling them without telling them, like, nah, I'm done and everything. So he goes and gets his final check. And then that's when the scene with Connell and James happened, where they, you know, they end on a mutual friendship, you know, type of, you know, good friends and whatnot. They stay friendly and whatnot. And he leaves, and then that's when we get this final moment where James and Joel and Frigo are out, like, on a hill or whatnot, and Frigo's having, like, a freaking Vietnam, he's playing, like, his Vietnam or something with some fireworks and everything, and they're talking, and Joel tells James a story about Herman Melville, about, even though he wrote Moby Dick at the end on his obituary, they still got his name wrong, and they call him Herman Melville, they call him Henry Melville, not Herman Melville. It's like, even in the end, they get your name wrong, so what does it even matter? Which, you know, in the course of that story, it kind of prompts James up to, like screw what he's been doing, and decides to, you know, still wants to go to New York to find M and everything. And when he gets up to leave, he actually, for the first time, he actually gets Frigo in the balls before he leaves. And then he ends up going to New York, and he reunites with M. They make up and basically get this little happy ending where they still end up together in a way. And that's how the movie ends. So, I mean, that's pretty much Adventureland. I like revisiting the movie because it is a good little coming of age movie. That the type of movie that this is, we don't really get a lot of movies like this anymore, which is kind of sad, because I do like little coming of age movies like this that kind of make you look back maybe at yourself when you were younger. Don't necessarily have to be from the same time period of when you were younger, but just it kind of makes you look back at certain things and you might relate to certain situations, certain characters, stuff like that. So I did like kind of going back, and I did find myself relating to James in certain aspects of the movie and everything. But if I had to give the movie a rating, of course, I'd give it a solid 3 out of 5. It's a solid, it's a good little hour and a half movie to watch. There are some moments where, like I said, you get a few montages and stuff like that. And for, in the beginning, a lot doesn't really happen. It's not until, like, maybe halfway through is where it kind of picks up, and everything that happens with James, M, Connell, it kind of all comes to a head, and then the aftermath of that. But overall, it is a fun movie to watch and everything. And it's kind of crazy, too, that even though Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig was in the movie, I found out that all their scenes were filmed, like, in 4 days because, you know, this is when they were still, like, regulars on Saturday Night Live, so they couldn't, you know, take too much time away from that to film the movie. So, but if you didn't know that they were only on set for, like, 4 days, you wouldn't even know it from how their scenes are sliced, you know, into the movie. So, favorite character. I don't know if I really have a favorite character for this because all of them has their ups and downs, but if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Joel. Probably say he's my favorite character because of the fact that he's the one, he's like the solid one of the group, even though the girl do shoot him down in a terrible way or whatnot, but he, next, I'd probably say next to Connell, he's the one who is James's most confidant person or whatnot. He is the confidant and who really kind of, even more so than Connell, is the one who, telling that Henry Melville story, is the reason why it prompts James up to even decide to leave and go, you know, live his life, is mainly because of Joel and what he says to him. So yeah, I say that that's probably my favorite character. And that's pretty much it for episode 108. I want to thank you guys for listening to the episode. Also, by the way, I forgot to mention earlier at the beginning of the episode, I want to thank Keita and Chris for doing their takeover episode for 107, where they talked about their top 5 family films. So if you haven't checked that episode out, definitely go back and check out the episode, because that's a nice little episode too, with them talking about their top 5 family movies and everything. as for me, you can find me on the Twitter, of course, at JMovieTalk, as well as on Instagram at JMTPodcast. So you can hit me up either one of those places. If you have any recommendations for whatever movie or anything like that that you would like for me to review or talk about on an episode, you can definitely hit me up there, as well as my email, which I don't really promote on here, but I'm going to try to get back into promoting that. Email is jmovietalk@gmail.com. Of course, you can check out all of the episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you need to get podcasts, and especially on the main site, which is podbean.com. That's tvzonepodcast.podbean.com. I will check you guys out for episode 109. Peace.